Knoll Nation, welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and welcome into today's show. On this episode, I wanted to title it, I was trying to think of a name. What would be a good name to come up with? Not something boring like post-BC thoughts or something like that. And just with the week that was last week and everything that went into it, I thought this would be a good one to call Knoll Better Week to be an FSU fan, because it really was one of the best weeks as a fan base, as a program, that Florida State has had in a long time. And, you know, daggone, or as Coach Bowen would say, daggummit, who more deserving than we are after the last few years of just all the negative and all the down stuff we've been through and everything like that. This is just, man, this was so relieving, so well deserving. It's like, I made a joke with someone where I was like, you just kind of sat thinking, man, what's going to go wrong? Like, are we going to get upset by BC or something? Because this week has just been too perfect. And, you know, outside of one short little emotional roller coaster of a hat toss that ended up turning into an awesome commitment ceremony, everything just went as planned. Everything went as good as you could have asked for. And so that's just pretty much what this episode is going to be about. Just going to recap a little bit of last week and then just kind of look at some things going forward. Florida State does take on Wake Forest potentially this Saturday. I know the hurricane may affect things, but I'm going to actually record the Wake Forest game preview tomorrow, hopefully. And I'll have it out for you guys either tomorrow afternoon or Thursday morning at the latest. And we'll get into a little bit more specifics on Wake Forest. We'll talk a little bit about them in this episode, but we'll get into some more specifics on that episode. So that'll be the full game preview coming out, like I said, hopefully tomorrow. And hopefully by then we know a little bit more about what's going to happen with the game. There has been talks about, you know, right now they're saying that everything's staying in place. It looks like the storm, you know, hopefully won't hit Tallahassee, but you do have to keep in mind that, you know, if it does hit somewhere else, you have emergency services and all the police and everything that need to be there for traffic control and stuff like that. They may be pulled to another part of the state. So that does make a challenge for things. And if you're to try to move the venue, you have to get all that, like, you know, you have to get stadium workers and traffic control and basically everything on the same page within a week's notice. And then there is also the possibility of moving the game to Florida State's bye week after Clemson. I believe Wake Forest takes on Boston College that day, but both of them have a bye week the week before, so that game could be moved to make room. With Florida State looking like there's a pretty good chance that they're going to challenge for the ACC Atlantic, I mean, this game has to be played, and it is important. So I'm sure they're going to figure something out. My best bet is it's going to be played at the same time it was planned. Just everything as planned, I think that's going to be the easiest way to go about it, or it'll be moved altogether. To be perfectly honest with you, and again, we're going to get more into Wake Forest on the next episode, but I think I like playing Wake Forest right now. I think you carry that momentum into another home game, which will be nice, but I also do see the advantage of having an extra week to prepare for NC State and also an extra week to get healthy for potentially both games, but you know, with injuries, you never know what could happen between now and then, so I'm okay with playing it this Saturday if they get the chance to, so as long as you don't put anything too many people at risk or anything, because you do have fans traveling and whatnot to consider, but they'll take all that into an account. But we'll get into that next episode. Hopefully we have some updates. You know, there's really not a whole lot you can do with the storm this far off the coast. And I mean, they call it a spaghetti model because it looks like someone threw spaghetti at a wall and you just don't know where it's going to go. So there's not a whole lot of update provided on that now, other than it currently is planned to be played as is. So back to last week, just the BC game in general. Like, well, let's actually rewind that. Let's start from the beginning. So early in the week, Florida State gets a commitment from four-star linebacker Blake Nicholson. Athletic guy, insane numbers on both sides of the ball. You go and you get someone out of California who's involved with some prominent West Coast schools and just a great get for Florida State. And then it sounds like he's been locked in for a while. And then you get Hakeem Williams on Friday. Scared you a little bit there with the hat toss. Thought we were going to see something bad happen again. Picked up the Miami hat, and you were like, oh, please. This is like the ultimate please don't. You know, if you're not going to go to us, at least don't go to Miami. And then, you know, 30 seconds later, he's has one of the best commitments I've seen, where you have two Seminole legends in Peter Warrick and Snoop Menace bring a jersey out for him to commit to Florida State. So it was just really awesome to see. And at that point, you just felt so good about where this program was at. You're 3-0 with a chance to go 4-0. You just got two big commitments in the same week. And you're like, man, this is what's wrong? Like, what's going to happen? Because this is too good to be true. So then you fast forward onto Saturday and you're sitting around. You got the 8 o'clock game, which I love night games. I love the primetime atmosphere. I love the primetime TV slot. But it is kind of tough sometimes to have to wait all day to watch your team play. But at least you get to watch everybody else. And, you know, you thought you really pay attention to the rivals and you pay attention to things overall. But those are, you know, you have Florida against Tennessee and you thought, well, they're probably going to lose that game. And they did, and they kept it a little closer than I thought, but they still lost. So they go to 2-2 on the season. And realistically, they should be almost 0-4 or 1-3. I mean, they kind of got a last-second savior against Utah, and they got lucky against South Florida that they couldn't handle a field goal snap. So you saw them lose another game, which was really good. Miami, you really didn't even feel like you were going to have to pay attention to it because it was another cupcake game. Or at least that's what it looked like. But, hey, they choked on a cupcake, and now that program might be left for dead. Who knows? I mean, they got North Carolina coming in this week, and they'll probably feel like they fixed their offense because North Carolina can't stop anybody. However, they're probably going to get 400 or 500 yards put up on them by the North Carolina offense. So that's the thing, is just seeing those two lose on top of that, especially – when you see Miami lose to a team like Middle Tennessee State, coming off of Texas A&M, they made excuses, you know, from here to California about why they lost that game, and oh, we played better than them, we were the better team, and everything. And then you go out and you get dominated basically for four quarters by Middle Tennessee, and shout out to FSU alum Rick Stockstill for putting a whooping on him. And he said that after the game, he said that we whooped him for four quarters, and I'm not ashamed to say it. So that was nice to see as well, just to see them get beat down like that. They benched Tyler Van Dyke, and it was in front of all of 500 fans who booed him about every other play. So you had those two things kind of happen too. So you got two big commitments, both of your rivals lost, one of them in an embarrassing fashion. Which, again, speaking of recruiting, I mean, both that has to help in recruiting. I mean, that just has to help, has to give you some momentum, because right now you're looking like the best team in the state, the best coached team in the state, and you're featuring some playmakers in this offense. And so then you move into the BC game, and you're thinking, well, we should win this one, but, man, everything's been going so good, I'm not going to hold my breath quite yet. And then Florida State comes out literally from the opening kickoff and just dominates Boston College in an absolute blowout fashion. BC was never in that game. They never had a chance. And I thought they were going to win. I predicted 38-17, but I didn't think it would happen like it did. I thought it would have been a little bit closer. You know, you start literally from the opening whistle and return a kickoff for a touchdown. And shout out to Trey Benson. He really looks good back at returner. I know he's only had one chance, but it was for a touchdown. And I mean, that guy's hard to bring down when he gets his speed built up in an open field. So I hope he gets more looks. I know Norvell said that there was some concerns with depth after they lost CJ Campbell at running back, and they had some depth concerns there. So they didn't really want to risk it, but they went ahead and gave him a shot, and you know, boom, look, you get a touchdown right out of it, the first kickoff return. So hopefully they see he gets more looks going forward. And then you're up 31-0 at halftime. And again, I mean, the game was over by halftime, and it was such a dominant performance by Florida State. This is not something we've seen by this team in a long time. Like we mentioned on the instant reaction, the last 20-point win they had was Duke in 2020, and I really don't know when it was before that. But you also held BC to the lowest passing yards so far this season, which is a good sign. Now, not that they're a great passing team, but Dracovic isn't terrible at quarterback, and Zay Flowers is a dynamic receiver, and you have a legit passing attack coming at you this week. So that was good to see as well. And I mean, truthfully, the game could have really even been worse. I mean, obviously Florida State got as far down as their third string. We saw AJ Duffy in there at quarterback for a few snaps, which was nice because Florida State hasn't been able to do that, even against FCS teams in recent years. And now you have an ACC, a conference opponent, where you're putting in third-string guys, which is just great to see. It's great to get those guys some reps in a game situation against a real team. I mean, of course we know Boston College isn't good, but, you know, and I guess Virginia Tech looks a lot worse than we thought, but they still, I mean, they lost 27-10 there, 22-21 against Rutgers. And I know their only win comes against an FCS team, but, you know, I mean, it's still a conference win, and you still put the largest point total on them of the season. You still had the largest winning score deficit, or whatever you want to call it, of the season as well. You know, and I feel like the pass interference in the end zone really didn't look like a catchable ball to me. I mean, it hit Zay Flowers in the helmet after he was already out of bounds. So even then, BC kind of got fortunate on their first score and kind of got some help from the refs there. But again, when you play in the ACC, you pretty much expect those things to happen on a regular basis. And looking at the Florida State offense in this game, I mean, they put up 530 yards of offense, which is incredible. I know BC is not good as a team, but their defense isn't terrible. Now, it's not really good either, but ironically enough, when I was doing my Wake Forest preparation for the preview tomorrow, BC currently, now this is after the Florida State game, this is Wake after Clemson, all this is current standings. BC is tied for 72nd in the country in total defense. And Wake is one of those teams that they're tied with. So you're basically getting the same type of defense again this week, the same around same quality of defense. And so to see you put up 44 points, especially when you pulled your foot off the gas late and you had the second and third string get in, I mean, that's promising to see, because it's, without a doubt in my mind, Florida State could have put up 50 points, 50 plus points. There was a lot of times they went for it on fourth down where they were, where they should have been within field goal range. But you really, right now, the one Achilles heel we have, the one negative we have is the kicker. And you just, right now, unfortunately, you can't trust him to kick. So they went for it on fourth down a lot. I mean, you probably could have added another 6 to 9 points just based on where they were kicking from. Or where they were going for it from on fourth down should have been a kickable field goal. They also missed an extra point, which is another point to the kicker struggles that we have. So 530 yards of offense, 44 points, and this offense now is averaging over 500 yards a game. It is top 20 in the country. I think it's number 16 total offense, which is, I mean, if you'd have told me last year that coming into this year, Florida State offense would be averaging 500 yards a game against after playing four games once against a top 15 defense in LSU, I probably would have thought you were high on something. But, I mean, this offense just looks different. It looks really good. And I know sometimes, given the things we've seen in the past, you don't always want to let your imagination run wild. But, guys, I mean, this is one of the best offenses in the country. Jordan Travis is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. But when you look at PFF, and I know that's not the gospel, PFF isn't, but their grades are usually pretty good at who's an impact player and who's not. Currently, this week, as of week four of college football season, Florida State has the number two highest graded quarterback in the country in Jordan Travis, and the number one highest rated receiving group in all of college football. I mean, if you want to talk about thinking somebody's high, like, if you'd have told me we had the best receiving core currently, now they may not be the most talented, but as far as production-wise, I don't care if you're a five-star or not. If you produce on the field, that's all that matters. And so if you'd have told me last year when Florida State had realistically the worst receiving core in the conference to now having the one of the, if not the best receiving cores in college football currently as of week four anyway, man, I would have been like, who are you talking about? Did I like fall and hit my head and miss something here? Because it really is impressive to watch, and we see the difference that it makes to have these type of playmakers in this offense. You see now that Norvell can run his offense the way he did at Memphis, and that was something that I posted about right before the first game, before the season started. I posted a pretty long thread on Twitter just talking about how I felt there was a lot of potential left in this offense, because when you looked back at Norvell's career averages, they would have finished top 25 in almost every category on offense last, you know, last year as compared to last year's teams. And so he, and I said, and I even said this on a podcast too. So you, I don't know if you listened to that episode or not, but I said that I didn't feel like he had the pieces in place to run his offense the way he wanted to. That's why they run the ball so much, because they didn't have receivers. They couldn't really pass it. They didn't have the O-line to block for him. And now that they have those pieces, you're starting to see this come to life right before our eyes. You're seeing that top, what would have been a top 25 offense last year, now it is a top 25 offense. So that's just the difference in the playmakers on this team this year has made all the difference. The difference in Jordan's ability to rely on his arm and be a great passing quarterback is changed this team. And you also have some additions at running back that have made a big difference. I mean, Trey Benson is an absolute monster, and Trayshawn Ward is playing excellent too, and Tua Philly. You got three backs averaging over 5 yards a carry. So it's just exciting to watch. It's fun to see. It's fun to, for them to have a powerful offense that, you know, when I talked about Wake Forest before, I said in the preseason, I said that I thought this might be the first loss of the season. I mean, you know, it, again, it's not about being right or wrong, but if you read the preseason magazine or the schedule breakdown article that I wrote, I predicted Florida State was going to start 4-1 to 5-0. And I thought the first loss of the season may come against Wake Forest because I thought it was a shootout that you might not be able to win. And, I mean, right now, it looks like Florida State has no problem, you know, going into a shootout head-to-head with someone like Wake Forest and scoring as many points as they do. So that's something that's really encouraging about this team. And it just also makes you think of the future, too. If Norvell can do this, and Johnny Wilson is an absolute weapon. He's 6'7". Micah Pittman is, you know, he's a tough receiver who plays well all over the field, and he's a bull and he runs over guys. Pokey Wilson, he's been a great receiver for you this season. Portiers is stepping up. And Malik McLean's been, you know, he's had a few catches here and there. He's developing. You know, he's still a young guy. And again, I don't really care about your star rating as long as you produce on the field. But my point is, imagine what this offense, if they're this good now, imagine what they can do when they have the more high-end talent. When you have a Julian Armella at tackle, when you have a Lucas Simmons at tackle, blue chip players up front on the offensive line, which is not something you have right now. You know, hopefully you can get Jordan to come back for one more year, but when you have a Hakeem Williams, a five-star wide receiver, Cam Davis, a five-star running back, when you get these guys into the fold and you get them into Norvell's offense, if they're averaging 500 yards a game now, I mean, the future looks bright. You know, there's no guarantee, and there's no guarantee that they're going to maintain this level throughout the rest of the season, but that's something that I'm going to get into in a minute as to why I think that they can. So just to keep it rolling on the BC game, again, Trey Benson had a great game, had a kickoff return and multiple scores, which I believe I saw a stat that said that was the first time a Florida State player had ever had a kickoff return for a touchdown and multiple scores in the same game. He has currently 32 missed tackles forced on the season, which first off is insane. Most of the running backs I'm looking at for other teams have like 6 or 8. He has 32. Now, granted, a majority of them came against Duquesne, but he's been on pace with a lot, having one of the highest missed tackle rates in the country ever since. He's averaging 7.2 yards per carry and has a PFF grade of 84.3. And if you've heard me talk about it before, you know, 60 is like you stepped on the field and you didn't run a single play. 70 is quality starter status. So a PFF grade of 84.3 is really impressive. And I mean, this guy looks like you just hit on him. And the staff, you know, they got criticized a little bit for taking a running back who came off a leg injury, but they saw something in him. And this staff has continuously shown an ability to evaluate talent that maybe other people have left for dead or just don't see the gold in them. And they were able to really find a real gem in the portal. And the best thing is he's still a young guy. He's still not that experienced. So the more he runs the ball, the more carries, the more touches he gets, the more snaps in this offense he gets, he's only going to get better. I mean, I think he had like less than 10 carries at Oregon. So this is really his first year in a full-on college football offense. And, I mean, like I said, you have to imagine with experience and time in the system, he's only going to get better. You also have Trayshawn Ward, who had a nice game. He's averaging 6.6 yards per carry with a PFF grade of 84.6. He himself has 21 missed tackles forced on the season. Toa Philly, he's at 5.3 yards a carry, PFF grade of 76.4. So each running back has multiple touchdowns. So you have three guys averaging over 5 yards a carry. And, I mean, we looked at LSU. They're Noah Kane, he was averaging, I think it was like 3.9 yards a carry. Wake Forest's back is averaging, I think, less than 3 yards a carry maybe. So to have those kind of weapons in your backfield is a real advantage for Florida State. And, you know, we talk about Jordan Travis and how great he's playing quarterback. And, you know, again, he's the second highest graded quarterback in Power 5. He's got the second highest QBR in the conference and eighth highest in the country. He comes back from injury where we thought he wasn't even going to play to have his first 300-yard game against a pretty okay passing defense. I mean, the dude is just like he's playing at an elite level. And I know elite is probably used a little too much in today's game, but he really is. And the other thing that I was talking about with someone the other day, he's not even really using his legs to their full ability yet either. Now, I understand he does want to prove that he's a quarterback and that he does have arm talent, but he is very good at escaping pressure in the pocket. And we've seen that multiple times this year where he can make something happen out of a busted, like, protection package, should I say. It's not a busted play, but, like, someone gets into the backfield and he has to scramble. He doesn't necessarily take off now. Like, he buys himself time with his legs, keeps his eyes downfield, and usually turns it into a big passing gain. But he hasn't even really tapped his running ability yet. He only has 48 yards rushing on the season. So that's the thing. There may be some games where he has to rush for 100 yards in a game, where the passing game just maybe isn't there, at least not to the degree they need it, and they may need his legs at some point. I know it helps having the backfield that you do so he doesn't have to run a whole lot, which I'm happy with because, hey, it keeps him, you know, it keeps him a little better chance of being healthy. Most of his injuries come from the pocket, but, I mean, again, you got a quarterback who, coming into this season, you were like, man, this guy's a dynamic runner, and we hope that he can turn into a good passer. And now he's graded as one of the best passers in the country, and he only has 48 yards rushing. I don't think anyone would have seen that coming. But again, you have a whole other aspect of his game that is currently untapped. And, I mean, you still have to game plan for that as a defense. You can say, well, he's not running a whole lot this year. The second you take your eyes off of him and don't think he will, he'll kill you on the ground. And so, I mean, it makes you excited to know that you still have a quarterback who could turn on the jets and break one on you, and we haven't even seen him really do it this season. You still have a lot of guys in this offense who are young and inexperienced and getting better. There's still a lot of potential left even for this group as it is to get better. I mean, Jordan has a great command of the offense. He has fun while he's playing. You could see some of the close-ups, the camera angles out during the BC game where he just smiles when he plays. He's happy out on the field. He's smiling. And it just makes him so fun to watch to play. But again, you know, like we talked about, this receiver group makes a big difference too. I mean, Jordan's playing at an elite level, but a lot of that does have to do with the receiver stepping up too. And it's been a different one each game so far. You had Portier stepped up in the Duquesne game. You had Pokey Wilson stepped up in the LSU game. You had Johnny Wilson stepped up in the Louisville game. And out of nowhere, here comes Darian Williamson. So who's going to be next? I mean, you still have Michael Pittman, who's really not had a breakout game yet. I mean, he's good to get you about 50 yards a game and bull over a few dudes. I mean, he's just a bully at receiver, blocking and catching and whatnot. But you still have, like, who's next? I mean, is it going to be Malik McLean? He's made some flash catches. It's just nice to see that you don't have to rely on one guy. You know, a few years ago when you had Tamori and Terry, you were like, man, we really have a top-end talent here at wide receiver, but that was pretty much all you had. And you just hoped that he could beat some guys and get open. But now, I mean, who are you gonna aim for? They obviously know about Johnny Wilson now on the other team's game plan, so you're going to have to give some extra protection to him so he doesn't just kill you all game. But if you do that, then how are you going to stop Pokey Wilson? How are you going to stop Portier? How are you going to stop Darian Williamson, which hopefully he's healthy after he had a little injury? We still haven't seen Deuce Spann really, like, break one yet, which I know the potential's there because he's a very good athlete. He's just still learning the position. Michael Pittman's due for a big game. So, again, you know, like we talked about, I mean, you just have a lot of excitement about this team because you realize they still have a ways to go. I mean, Johnny Wilson is currently the highest graded receiver in Power 5 as of week 4. Cam McDonald has looked really nice at tight end. He's having a good season in the receiving game. So it's just exciting to be able to have something that is performing the way it is, and you know that it can still get better with some time, with some experience, and with some guys being able to step up. You know, because like we talked about, last year, Florida State, not a single receiver broke 400 yards in the entire season, in 12 games. So far this season, Florida State already has two receivers with over 200 yards and six receivers with over 100 yards. And, I mean, it is definitely exciting to watch. You know, again, I understand that BC wasn't that great with their pass defense, but it wasn't just this one. I mean, they had a good passing game against LSU, which is a top 15 defense currently. They had a good passing game against Louisville, who isn't the greatest defense, but they're pretty on average with some, or on par with some of the teams we're going to see the rest of the season. Offensive line has been performing better than we expected, even battling injuries. We thought they would be pretty okay. We were hoping for them to just be average, you know, just don't be a liability. And so far, I think they've done that. I think they have performed better than expected. And kudos to them guys. Kudos to Alex Atkins for stepping up this year. I mean, look at Darius Washington. First off, you're already down both starting tackles and probably your sixth guy in Caden Lyles, who would be playing guard or center for you at some point, potentially, to the point that you've had a walk-on center at one point. And now you have Darius Washington, who's, again, he's a nice player. I wasn't really worried about him stepping up because, honestly, I think he's one of your better offensive linemen. And since he's been stepping in for Robert Scott, who's been injured, he only has one pressure allowed in 98 snaps. So you can't afford many more injuries, but the good thing is now you're getting these guys' experience. You're building depth. Maurice Smith so far this season, he's only allowed four pressures and zero sacks in over 200 snaps. He has a PFF grade of 74.5. That's top-notch. I mean, you don't see offensive linemen get those grades very often. Gibbons, he's been solid for you. He's only allowed five pressures and no sacks in 250 snaps. Demetri Emmanuel, while he hasn't been the best pass blocker, he's a solid run blocker. He's a big dude, and he moves people. On defense, you're seeing guys like Patrick Payton, who has almost as many snaps as Jared Verse. He only has four less snaps on the season than Jared Verse. I mean, it's almost hard to believe that you're getting this far into your depth and still getting this level of performance. And so, to me, that shows signs that Florida State is building quality depth. Now, over these next three games where you have tougher tests, of course you're going to want your starters back because, I mean, these backups, they're getting experience, and you feel a lot better about the depth of this team than you have in the past. But there is a drop-off from the ones to the twos. And so, to me, to beat, if you want to go 3-0 in a stretch of Wake Forest, NC State, and Clemson, you need to be at full strength. You need to be at 100%. But now, when these guys get in the game, it's not a question anymore of whether they can do it. It's they can do it to at least to the level where you can beat ACC teams. I mean, that's the thing. You're 2-0 in conference play, and you both of those games, you didn't have your best defensive tackle. You didn't have your best defensive end. One of those games, you didn't have one of your better corners. One of those games, you didn't have your quarterback for half the game. Both of those games, I mean, I guess Louisville, you had Robert Scott for a little bit, but you didn't have him for BC, so you have been depleted on both sides of the ball, and you're still 2-0 in conference play. So it's just so encouraging to see them. You know, Tate is another example of this, where you're getting him quality depth and quality snaps. He didn't play a ton in this game, but he had some nice runs and he had some nice throws. And so you're building that depth. You're getting to where you can trust the backups to come in and not lose you the game. And when you combine that with getting your starters back, the ceiling is just high for this team. And that's really the exciting thing about that too, seeing the younger guys get some play. I mean, again, when you look at Joshua Farmer, you didn't really know if you were going to get anything from him this year or not. He has more snaps this season than Fabian Lovett. And if you'd have told me that Florida State would be 4-0 and Josh Farmer has more snaps than Fabian Lovett and Patrick Payton has four less snaps than Jared Verse, no way, dude. Like, no way. I'm not buying that. But that is the case. And so these guys have really stepped up. So, I mean, again, you're excited about your starters, but kudos to the guys in the backup roles who have had to step up and performed admirably when they've had the, when they've had the opportunity. So, again, like I said, it just makes you think of if they can be 4-0 without some of their best guys, what can they do when they are at full strength? And that's what has me excited. I mean, this defense, they really fly around. We're starting to see that team speed that Florida State's known for. I mean, these guys do really fly around. And the linebackers, you can tell. I mean, Kalen DeLoach, he is making himself a household name. He is just so athletic. He flies around, and he makes tackles. And he's really becoming that guy for FSU. And then you also have Tatum Bethune, who's been a dominant force in the middle of your defense. And DJ Lundy looks good. And, I mean, the defensive line in this game, they got 15 pressures, 2 sacks, and 2 TFLs versus Boston College. And it probably should have been more than that because Jerkovic was pretty good at, like, throwing the ball away or dumping it off to somebody as Florida State defenders had him wrapped up. So, I mean, because he's a bigger guy, 6'5", over 200 pounds, so he was able to do that. The stop rate, which is basically on drives. The stop rate is a drive that ends in a punt, turnover, or turnover on downs. Florida State held them. Florida State had a stop rate of 54%, so that means a majority of their drives didn't account to nothing. Briggs, I thought, had a nice game inside. Greedy Vance is turning into a nice player for you. And with Amarion Cooper coming back, which was really good to see, and he got a pick in his first game back, you're hoping that can get him in rhythm because they're going to need him this week. And it is nice that you're starting to build some depth in the secondary too. Now, of course, they haven't been tested a ton yet because you've had some, you know, rushing quarterbacks that don't really throw a whole lot. But you're going to need those guys this week. And when I went back and watched the film, man, I tell you what, Azaria Thomas, he flashed multiple times when you saw him get in. I know he still hasn't been in a starting role yet or on the field yet, but, man, that guy just moves different. Like, when you watch the film, you were just like, who is that? Like, who is that? He keeps, like, the way he closes on people, the way he moves across the field, it just looks different. And so that, again, another bright sign for the future, and I'm excited to see him get on the field. So, that, I mean, we're not going to go too much more in depth on the BC game. I just thought it was a dominant performance on offense and defense. I thought it was a great showing by special teams outside of your kicker. Obviously, it's disappointing to miss an extra point. And even the field goal you had, it was pretty shaky. So I'm really not sure where they go from there because you're going to probably not want to leave points on the field in these next three games. I mean, it could come down to a field goal, and you just don't trust it right now. So that was really the only negative spot on a great night that ended a great week for Florida State. You get two big commitments, both your rivals get beat, one of them gets embarrassed on national TV, and you end up getting one of your biggest blowout wins over a conference opponent in some years in front of a sellout crowd, in front of Doak, which was rocking, in front of an environment that you don't get a whole lot of places. And that was very special, and it was great to have on a big recruiting weekend where you had a lot of guys in attendance for the game and walked away. I'm sure they had to be impressed. I mean, I'm sure you had to see if anyone was interested in the Big Three, and you see Florida go lose, and then you see Miami get embarrassed at home in front of 500 fans that's booing them the whole time. Then you're standing there in Doak Campbell Stadium in Tallahassee with almost 80,000 people, you know, screaming their head off for the Noles. And even BC players at one point on the broadcast, they said, that one of the sideline reporters said that, I think it was the BC tight ends, came over and told their coach that they could not hear on the field. They couldn't hear the plays that were being called. And that's an advantage. That's something that makes you glad that you're getting two of these next three opponents at home, because it can make a difference. When you look at the Wake Forest game, Clemson played. Now, you know, Clemson is pretty deadly at home, but Clemson had to go play on the road in front of Wake Forest Stadium, and I don't even know how much it holds, probably 30,000-35,000, not a whole lot. And a majority of that was Clemson fans. So they really didn't have a ton of noise there to deal with. And Wake Forest, you know, they I'm sure they deal with it going into Clemson on occasion and NC State, but that's something they're going to have to deal with this Saturday, is the noise, and it can cause communication issues. I mean, Clemson has to come to you. You know, they're used to playing in front of their home crowd, and having noise as an advantage for them, which is part of the reason they're so successful at home. And now you get them, and you know, with the excitement behind this team, you know, unless something terrible happens the next 2 weeks, you're probably going to have an advantage for your crowd noise, because I can't imagine Florida State not being a sellout too. That's going to be a huge game. And so really, moving forward, Florida State has a chance to prove itself over the next 3 games. You get ranked for the first time in a long time, which was just another thing to add to last week. You finally get to see a number by this team's name. You finally get to see them get ranked, which does feel good. And I know it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things if you go lose the next 3 games. But again, you have a top 25 matchup in Doak for the first time, I think, since 2015. So it's just something, another thing to be excited about. And now you have the chance to prove yourself on the national stage. You now have a top 25 game followed up by, right now, it's a two top 10 teams. Obviously, they play this weekend, so someone's going to have to lose. So, you know, more than likely, one of those may, they, if NC State wins, they could both be top 10. If Clemson wins, NC State is number 10, so they'll probably fall out of the top 10, but it'll still be a top 15, top 20 matchup. And then Clemson obviously would stay in the top 5, so you have another top 5 or you know, a top 5 matchup coming after that. So three top 25 games in a row. And there, after this, after going through this stretch, you know, there will be no more talk about the schedule. LSU, that win keeps getting better and better by the week. Louisville, that win keeps looking better with them winning. And so this is now your chance to be like, it doesn't matter who we played in the past. Whether LSU was, it's kind of the win you're hanging your hat on. But now you have your chance to get three top 25 wins in a row in 3 weeks. And after that, no one can really say anything, because you have done something that really no team out there has done yet in college football. I don't think anybody's played three top 25 teams in a row like this. So again, you feel good about it though, because you do get two of them at home. NC State, I hate playing at Raleigh, but to be honest, they're probably the worst of the three teams. They do have a pretty good defense, but their offense has underperformed this year. So, I mean, if you were going to play one on the road, that's probably it, because you never want to play at Clemson, because they are, I don't know what their streak is at home right now, but it's ridiculous. So I think the last time they actually, I saw a stat during the Wake Forest game where the last time they lost at home was when Pitt upset them. And I forget when that was, but it was like 2018 or something. So, you know, that if I had to pick, I mean, Wake Forest on the road is probably the least hostile environment, but I think Wake's a much better team than NC State as far as their offense goes, which is what concerns me more than anything, because I feel like Florida State's offense is our strength too now, which is not something we expected this year. To me, in those games, if you're able to go 3-0, that's amazing. I mean, that would be unexpected. It very possible. I don't know that Florida State is going to win all three of them, but I think all three are winnable. If Florida State wins those games, all of them, and sitting in a bye week at 7-0 with Georgia Tech in front of you, they might not lose another game. And I know that sounds far-fetched to even talk about given the last few years, but if you make it through these three unscathed, they might not lose another game the rest of the year. I mean, you got Miami on the road, who looks terrible. You got Florida at home. Syracuse is really going to be your biggest challenge. If you go 2-1 in this stretch, it would still be awesome, because you would still have two likely top 25 wins. You would still be going into the bye week at 6-1, which is not where you really expected to be at the beginning of the season. So that would also be impressive. You would have, like we said, two top 25 wins. You would still be ranked. You would still be in the running for the Atlantic, because that's the other thing. These next 3 weeks are the three teams that you're competing with for the Atlantic Championship. So as far as the conference goes, your destiny is in your hands over the next 3 weeks. And you win all three, I mean, you're in pretty good shape there. Because as far as ACC games left on the schedule, you have Georgia Tech, which you feel really good about. I mean, they just fired their coach and athletic director. That program's in shambles. And then you have Miami that you feel good about winning. And then you have Syracuse. And if you beat all three of these teams, I mean, you know, you could almost lose a game, a conference game, and still have the head-to-head and still get into the ACC championship. So, you know, that's not somewhere we really expected to be. And to me, if you finish 2-1, like we said, you're in control, or at least you're in the hunt for the ACC Atlantic title. And you're probably on pace for a New Year's Six game, to be honest, just if you finished strong. And I actually saw one of the ESPN, and I know this is a projection after 4 games in season, doesn't mean anything, But they already projected, one of the guys projected Florida State to be in the Orange Bowl. And, you know, let me, like, I just want to say real quick, no one in the Florida State fan base, no one in the Florida State world thinks we have won a daggone thing yet. No one's out here going, Jordan Travis is the Heisman winner. We're in a New Year's Six. We're the best team in the conference. We're not saying that. But daggone to everybody else out there, we have sucked for the last few years. We're going to enjoy this 4-0 record. You know, everyone keeps coming on social media trying to poo-poo on what Florida State's doing. And I'm just tired of hearing it because, like, we haven't had much to be happy about. And now we do. And we're going to enjoy it. And if you don't like it, mute yourself. You know what I mean? Because we're going to enjoy this record that we have so far. We're going to enjoy the way this team's playing, no matter how the season ends. Obviously, you want to end it strong. Even in this stretch, even if you go 1-2, I know it's not ideal. It's still not terrible. And the reason I say that is as long as the two losses are close, as long as you don't get blown out or beat down in any game, which I think Florida State's past that. I don't think we're going to see any more of the 30-40 point losses or anything embarrassing like that. But I know the expectation bar has been raised this season based on where they're playing or the way they're playing. But you probably expected 1-2 in the beginning of the season. And so now that you're 4-0, if you still went 1-2, you're still going to come out on the other side into the bye week 5-2 and a couple winnable games coming up. So you beat Georgia Tech and you're bowl eligible already. So that's still an accomplishment. And I know it would be disappointing. I understand that. But if you're sitting at 5-2 with a top 25 win in one of those three games and you need one more win and you got a terrible Georgia Tech team that would get you bowl eligible, that's still an improvement. And you could still add some more wins later on. You just don't want to go 0-3. I think that would be hugely disappointing given the way Florida State has played this season. So 3-0 obviously is amazing. 2-1 is still very, very good and keeps you in the race for the conference in a New Year's Six Bowl. 1-2, acceptable. You get a top 25 win. You still got some things in front of you. You could still make a pretty good bowl game. But 0-3, I think, would be a definite disappointment. Even if you lose one, you still want to see it stay close. But again, all three of these are winnable. I mean, when I watched Wake Forest, and again, we're going to get into Wake Forest in the next episode, but their offense is just ridiculous. I mean, it's like they run that ridiculous little delayed mesh point offense. And honestly, 90% of their scoring plays, they just chunk it up and just hope for the best. And I mean, when you watch I watched the Wake Forest Clemson game because, like, I unfortunately don't have time to just go back and watch everyone. So I picked that one to watch because it was last week and it was a team that I feel was probably the most comparable to us in our current situation. You know, when you're talking about Vandy and Liberty and Virginia Military as their other games. And there was, first off, Clemson's secondary is toast. Like, their DBs are not good. And that is pretty exciting. I think their pass defense is 106 in the country. So when you saw half of their plays, they literally just chunk it up and hope that their receiver comes down with a play. Now, granted, they trust their receivers because they are good. And they have three good receivers. But half the time, Clemson's DBs, they were either so burnt that they had to grab the guy and pull him down for a PI, which I think almost like 75% or 60% of Wake Forest yards in the first half all came off pass interference from doing just that. And so, I mean, you don't feel like this is a team. It's a very boom or bust offense. And Hartman is good. He's thrown for 300 yards and multiple scores in every game since he's been back. It doesn't look like he missed a beat. And if you didn't have Hartman in this game, I think Florida State would have a runaway victory. I think now it's going to be a shootout, but now you feel better about Florida State being able to win a shootout, especially because, to me, Florida State is a more functioning offense. Wake Forest is a more kind of like fluky type offense, but they make it work. And so I just, you know, again, you feel good about all these. You look at NC State and you got a team who they got outgained by Texas Tech by over 100 yards. But Texas Tech had four turnovers in the game. So maybe they don't win that game if Texas Tech, you know, and then they go and beat Texas after that. So that win does look better for them, but they didn't even put up 300 yards in that game. So their offense has been vastly underperforming. Now, they are a top 15 defense. They're the second best defense on your schedule. So there's going to be a challenge there, but you feel good about this offense. So I like that matchup. And then Clemson, man, they're just not as good as I thought. I mean, they got holes all over the place. Now, that speaks to Wake Forest's defense when you let DJ throw for almost 400 yards. I think it was like 370-something yards, where he hasn't had a game of over 250 yards this entire season. So, I mean, this defense is not great. And so one thing I wanted to do looking forward as we kind of wind this podcast down here is I wanted to – because everyone talks about who Florida State played. And if you're a rival fan base, you think they haven't played anybody. I saw a thing on social media earlier where it said – given the performance based on their record, the strength of wins, Florida State is currently number one in the country, or would be. So I thought everyone talked about that and whatnot. So I kind of looked at what Florida State has faced and what they have done versus who they have yet to face, and can they keep this same level of performance going? So what I did was I looked at every defense that Florida State has played and is going to play. And so as far as total defense, for the opponents on the schedule. And just for reference, Florida State offense is currently 15th in the country, and they're averaging over 500 yards a game. They had the 40th ranked passing offense at 277 yards a game, and the 13th ranked rushing offense at 226.8 yards a game. When you look at LSU, they're the 12th ranked defense, averaging 257 yards per game allowed. Florida State put up 392 yards on them. When you look at Louisville, 52nd ranked defense, they average giving up 350 yards a game. Florida State put up 455. When you look at BC, and I didn't count Duquesne, this was just FBS games, but BC tied for 72nd in the country. They allowed 378.5 yards a game. Florida State put up 530 yards. And so every opponent that you've played so far, you have beat their season average allowed yards by over 100 yards a game. And even when you look at those defenses and you look at their average points allowed, LSU is averaging giving up 14.25 points a game. Florida State scored 24. That's plus 9.75 points. Louisville averaging 20.75 points allowed per game. Florida State scored 35. That's plus 14.25 points. BC has been averaging giving up 27.5 points a game. Florida State put up 44 on them. That's plus 16.5 points a game. So, again, you can really see how if they are able to continue to outgain and outscore by 100-plus yards and multiple scores a game, they can win some of these shootouts. And when you look at the defenses you have coming up, I just don't see a reason why Florida State can't keep this momentum going. Because like we mentioned earlier, Wake Forest is currently tied for 72nd with the same exact yardage allowed as BC. They just allowed Clemson to put up 550 yards on them. Clemson's offense is not good. So, I mean, if they're allowing 378.5 yards a game, the same as BC, Clemson's offense is not as good as yours, and they put up 550 yards, and Florida State just put up 530 yards on Boston College. I don't see why they can't get 500-plus yards on this Wake defense. Now, granted, you might give up 500 yards, but again, there's no reason Florida State can't do that. So NC State, they have the 13th-ranked defense in the country, giving up 261.5 yards per game. Now, they haven't really played the hardest schedule yet. You had Eastern Carolina, you had Charleston Southern, and I think another kind of nobody game. So their stats may be padded just a little bit there. But that's going to be your next toughest defense to face. But, you know, you also look at NC State has the 69th best offense, so you have some opportunities there. Clemson, I don't know what's going on. I mean, their secondary is bad because they had the 48th ranked defense. And last year they were top 10 in nearly every category. This year they're 48th in defense, and they're allowing 346.2 yards per game. They do have the 8th best rushing defense because their defensive line is really good, but their pass defense is 104th in the country. So with the way Jordan's been throwing the ball, I mean, Clemson doesn't look as scary as you thought at the beginning of the season. Next up, you have Georgia Tech, 101st ranked defense in the country, allowing 412 yards a game. Their rush defense is 120th in the country, and so you should be able to really pound the rock on them all you want, you know. Miami, 44th best defense in the country, allowing 338 yards a game, and they've only played one Power 5 team. You know, I mean, look at what Middle Tennessee State did. against them. They put up over 400 yards on the Miami defense, so they don't exactly scare you either. And their pass defense is 91st in the country, and their corners got burnt by Middle Tennessee for an entire game, and you know that your passing offense is better than that. Syracuse, 39th-ranked defense, yeah, it's pretty good, top 40, 327 yards a game allowed, and they're pretty balanced. Their run defense is 38th, their pass defense is 59th. Again, I think Syracuse, after you get through this three-game stretch, is one of your tougher games on the schedule. I believe they actually did break the top 25 this week. I think they are number 25. Louisiana Lafayette, they're just not the team that they were last year. Their defense is 67th in the country, allowing 372.2 yards a game. And Florida is 106th in defense. So, you know, they're allowing over 400 yards a game. Their rush defense is 117th in the country. So you see some opportunities there. You see why, you see a path to where Florida State can continue to average, you know, to really beat up on these defenses with an impressive offensive showing. And even then, when you flip to the other side of the ball, the total offense for the opponent's coming up. The FSU defense is 28th in total defense, so that's top 30 D. Your pass defense is 16th in the country, which, again, you haven't had a whole lot of real good quarterbacks, and you're about to see some of that coming up this week. And then your rush defense is 73rd at 144.8. But, again, you've had a lot of quarterbacks on the ground that's kind of been, you know, running all over you a little bit, so that hurts. But or that pads that stat a little bit, should I say. You still won the game, so it didn't hurt you that bad. But LSU, 22nd offense in the country, they're putting up 487 yards a game. Florida State held them to 348 yards. Louisville, the 45th best offense in the country, putting up 449 yards a game. You gave up 495. So you do see where the defense has not been quite as strong as the offense, but, you know, hopefully once they get their starters back, that'll change things. BC was the 121st offense in the country. They're averaging 283 yards a game. FSU held them to 235. And then, really, when you look at Wake, their offense is only the 52nd best in the country. They're averaging 437.5 yards a game, but a lot of that is because their rushing game is not great. It's 104th in the country. So NC State, 69th best offense in the country. Clemson is the 40th best offense in the country, and they haven't really played a lot of tough games either. Georgia Tech, 112th in the country. Miami, 46th. Cuse, 81st. Louisiana Lafayette, 103rd in the country. UF, 68th offense in the country. So you just, like I said, you really see where this team could find some success. I mean, you don't have a lot of, you don't have a single top 25 offense on your schedule the rest of the season. You have one top 25 defense on the schedule the rest of the season, and you have, what, three top 50 defenses that you have yet to face, and you've already faced a top 25 and the 52nd best defense, which is, you know, almost top 50. So you see the paths to success if they can just keep playing at the level that they are. And this team plays so hard for each other, for their coach, for the fans, that you don't see them coming out and having a complete letdown. Obviously, there's some trap games, and there's a lot of things that can still unfold. But, I mean, realistically, when you look at Florida State being 4-0, they've also been pretty unlucky. I mean, they've had a lot of injuries. They fumbled on the one-yard line in the LSU game. Their kicking game is abysmal. So there's been so many things that have went wrong for this team, and they've still been able to overcome it and get to 4-0. And again, like we talked about with Florida State being ranked, Florida State's playing some of the best football in the country right now. I mean, they look like a really good team. And I know it's hard sometimes to let yourself kind of dream to that. And by no means am I comparing Florida State to Alabama and Georgia right now, but I mean, look at Georgia. They struggled with Kent State this weekend. They came out flat. They looked uninterested with a lesser opponent, and it was a one-score game in the fourth quarter. You know, you look at Alabama. They beat two bad teams in a blowout fashion. They beat an unranked Texas team by 1 point on the road, who just lost to Texas Tech, and they beat Vandy, kind of the doormat of their conference, 55-3. Well, Florida State blew out an FCS team how they were supposed to. They beat LSU in a quote-unquote neutral site game by 1 point also, and they beat Louisville on the road with half their starters missing, and then you blow out the kind of a conference doormat yourself, 44-14. So, like I said, I'm not comparing them to them, but when you look at the record and you look at the way they've won the games that were challenging, they've won the games where they had adversity, and now they're getting to the point where they're blowing out teams that they're supposed to blow out. It wasn't like this game was 10 points. They blew out Boston College the way they should have, the way a more dominant team would look. And, you know, it just really makes you get excited for what this team can accomplish the rest of the year. You know, again, you got Wake coming up who just gave up 550 yards to a bad Clemson offense this game, and you get them at home. So that's just, like I said, that's something that I'm really encouraged about the future of this team based on what we've seen. They've started, you know, again, like I said, in the preseason preview, I predicted them to start 4-1 to 5-0. I didn't think it would look like this. So it's just been, it's been a very impressive performance so far by this team. And like I said, though, it doesn't mean anything if you go 0-3 in the next few games. Florida State hasn't won diddly squat yet. I mean, you know, not to be hard on them or anything, but it's the truth. You can't stop at 4-0. You have to keep this going. But, you know, with the level of play that we've seen, you just do feel like every game on the schedule is winnable. And, you know, to be honest, there's been some favorable things happen so far. I mean, you got LSU game one before they kind of were getting in rhythm. You got a bye week before Louisville. You got the week zero game to get in rhythm. You got BC coming at home, who was a bad team. You have Wake Forest at home. You get Clemson at home. You get, you have to go to NC State, but they haven't been as good as you thought. You get Florida at home. You got Miami on the road. You thought might be one of your more challenging road games. You still thought it was winnable. Now it looks very winnable. You know, I really think the only game that you went from the start to now where you're like, uh-oh, that one's going to be tough, is Syracuse. And they still have been, I mean, they've been human. They just had a very narrow win over a Virginia team that's not all that great. So, I mean, that's just pretty much it. It was a nice win. It was a great week for Florida State fans. We haven't had this much positive energy and this much positive momentum in a while. And I know that the fans are going to keep rewarding this team by showing up on Saturday, and I know the home field advantage is going to be big for Florida State. And I understand that, you know, things can go bad and you can have off games, but so far this team, they really come to play every Saturday. And I think that's probably the single most impressive thing about this team. And there's a lot of things to be impressed about, but, you know, I do think that just the way they play, the way they fight, and the confidence that they have has been the most impressive. And to me, I just, you know, you got a chance now to silence everybody, to put yourself in the national picture. Because like I said, if you can somehow go 3-0 in the stretch, you'll end up in the top 10. And I mean, Florida State, if you are 7-0 going into the bye week with three top 25 wins and you beat LSU, I mean, tell me there's a better, you know, look, I'm not trying to start thinking about playoffs by any means. But if you go 3-0 in the stretch, they might not lose another game. And if they do, it might be one. I worry about that Syracuse game on the road, just a sleepy game in the dome, you know, stuff like that. But the expectations has been raised for this team. And I think you expect them to win at least maybe two out of the three. But you just can't go 0-3 in the stretch. And I think that's the big takeaway. 3-0, 2-1, even 1-2 wouldn't be ideal. But, you know, you still have a top 25 win. You're still 5-2 in the bye week. So Florida State has a chance to make some noise this coming 3 weeks, and I think that they will do well. I think they're ready for the challenge. I think they're up for the challenge. You know, you just keep thinking, well, they might come out flat one game, and they just come out ready to play. So hopefully they get some starters back, because I know that would make a difference, and you will need them in some of these games coming up. And, I mean, as far as Wake Forest goes, as of right now, it's still on. We'll have to wait and see if this game gets changed to a different date or anything, but yeah, guys, I'm really excited about the direction of this team, because like I said, you've competed against about the average that you're gonna face the rest of the season. You've beat a top 25 defense that you outscored and outgained their average. You've beat almost a top 50. I mean, they're right on a fringe top 50 defense. And you don't have but one top 25 defense left to face. You don't have any top 25 offenses left to face. So you feel good about where you stand right now. You feel good about actually being a contender for the ACC, and that is going to sort itself out real quick. So, you know, like I said, we don't want to get excited. We don't want to pump up the hype train just yet. We don't want to look like Miami. You know, we don't want to inflate our heads so big they can't fit through the door, and now we look like idiots because everything's coming crashing down. So I don't want to do that yet. But it is okay to dream a little bit, you know. I mean, you go from 0-4 to 4-0 in a year's time, and you go from the way the teams looked last year to the way they play this year, and it truly is impressive. It really is. And so I'm just excited about the next few weeks and them getting a chance to really make some noise on a national stage. And you hope they can come out on the other side of it with some really nice victories and still in the top 25 and still in the running for the Atlantic. And, you know, I tell you what, I live up near Charlotte. And one of the main reasons I moved up here in 2014, I went to Raleigh, and I knew I was going to move to North Carolina. And I went to Raleigh, and I went to Charlotte, and I didn't want to do Raleigh because I was like, well, I could still go to NC State games, but their fans are so terrible from what I've heard. It didn't sound interesting to me. So I was like, well, if I go to Charlotte, you know, we should at least make the ACC championship game every now and then. And yeah, we've made it one time since I moved. So I would love to see them get back up here. You know, I would love to see them play close to home again, and I'm ready for it. And I hope that they can get back to that. But, you know, it's a little early to start dreaming about that yet. But, you know, when you see this team playing the way they are week in and week out, you can at least see the path to get there. And I do think it helps that, you know, the Atlantic is loaded right now. But you feel like you're one of the better teams in the Atlantic. And, you know, you'll get that measuring stick coming up real soon. You know, if you can beat Clemson. And realistically, if I had to pick one, if you had to go 1-2, man, let me beat Clemson. Just because that's your recruiting battle right there. That's the one you compete against. That's kind of the dominant program in the Atlantic that you need to dethrone. But I'll take anyone I can get. I'll take all of them if we can get it. So I look forward to it. I'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Well, it may come out Thursday, but I'm going to record tomorrow the Wake Forest preview. I'm also going to be making a guest appearance on another podcast, and I'll share that with you guys on social media coming up just to preview the Wake Forest game as well. So I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate your support. We just hit 500 followers on Twitter. I believe we're just now over 1,500 on Facebook. Again, this thing's just growing, and I appreciate everybody's support if you listened. And so thanks again, and we'll catch you for the Wake Forest preview. Enjoy this 4-0 start. Enjoy these commitments. Enjoy this momentum. Enjoy our day in the sun, because you never know how long it's going to last, and we haven't had this in a long time. So just enjoy it, because, hey, there's no better week to be a Noles. So thanks for listening. See you guys soon, and go Noles.